Welcome to Talking TRM, the Travel Risk Management Podcast. I'm Bex Debman and I'm an independent consultant specialising in ISO 31030. During my transition from corporate travel to travel risk, I met some incredible individuals driving travel risk management forward with passion and expertise. On this podcast, I'm going to chat with them about their stories and hopefully inspire our listeners to start their own travel risk management journey. Hello and welcome to another episode of Talking TRM, the podcast dedicated to travel risk management. My name is Bex, also known as Travel Risk Bex, and I am your host. Today, I am joined by, and I always start like this, I'm joined by another friend. I must be like the podcast host with the most friends in this industry. But I just feel like that around all of my guests, because they're people that I've got to know either in a short amount of time since I've moved across to risk, or I've known from my career in travel previously. But they're doing great things, and they're another part of the story that we need to explore when we are looking at expanding travel risk management to its sort of maximum. So this particular person, we have a little bit of history. So we have known each other for actually quite a few years, definitely from the travel side. We've worked for the same company, which was HRS, but at different times. We may go into that, we may not. And then I moved sort of into TMC world, and this person sort of stayed on the supplier side from the accommodation side. And then weirdly, we met about 3 or 4 months ago while we were doing the People's Awards, and a whole conversation then came out around about what is now happening in this person's world. And I'm really pleased to say that it really is doing wonders as far as travel risk management is concerned. So it was one of those meetings that was just meant to happen and destined to happen. And now I've managed to get him on a podcast too, so he can tell you all about it. So without further delay, who are you and what do you do?
Thank you, Bex. I'm Gary Hurst. I think you're right. We do go back quite some time. I think it's about 15 years, 16 years maybe. So, I'm the founder of MISA, and we're a technology company specializing in accommodation for business travel. And I'll probably touch more on what that technology does later in the conversation. But just to give you a sort of bit of a background, I was a latecomer into travel. My background sort of previous to that was actually in insurance and financial advice. And I guess I always had an element of risk management with those roles. So I think subconsciously I've always kept that. Whenever I've done mortgage advice, there's always been things like life assurance, critical illness insurance, just to make sure that you cover that risk if you're obviously critically ill, things like private medical insurance. So all the elements that, within that particular environment that focused on minimizing the financial risk, I guess, to individuals. So I guess without knowing it, I sort of carried this over into the next role. And getting into travel was completely by chance. I relocated. I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do, but I did know that I wanted to go down a different route. And as you do, I think in those early days of putting CVs out online, I got a message from the sales director at HRS, a lovely chap called Clive Gould, who said he was interested in talking to me, and the rest is history. That was my welcome into the travel industry, and I've sort of kept within accommodation throughout that period, because HRS were one of the sort of front leaders in hotel booking technology that actually was pulling content not from the GDS but directly from its own hub, if you like. So there seems to be a pattern that I've sort of maintained that's related to accommodation and technology. And then I've sort of, I guess, in the last few years, reintroduced that risk background that I've got from being a financial advisor into the mix and what I'm doing now.
Thank you. So let's get into a little bit more about what you're doing now, if that's okay. So talk to us a little bit about how these two worlds have kind of collided for you and therefore what you've created out the back of that, if you don't mind.
Yeah. So that time with HRS was I think it was probably about 18 months. And probably 18 months down the line from starting, I still didn't understand the industry particularly. But what I was aware of was this sort of concept of making accommodation easier to book, and particularly content that wasn't available through the GDS. And then I joined Bridge Street and focused on service accommodation. And what I found with that sort of change was almost going back years, I guess, you know, pre-technology, because I sort of walked into a world where everything was done manually, by email or by telephone, and you know, I was involved in the account management of some of the sort of larger corporates based in the UK and overseas with a strong base in the UK, and I used to go into every quarterly meeting and they would sort of say, when are you going to make it easy to book service accommodation? When are we going to know exactly who we're staying with? Because, you know, this doesn't seem to be the transparency. Are we staying in your apartments or are we staying in somebody else's apartments? You know, we don't seem to know that. And our travellers don't know that. And that really came to the front when I actually had a meeting with one of the sort of travel managers who we arranged for him to stay in an apartment in a different city in Europe. And when he arrived at his apartment, there was nothing about us there. So he straight away, he couldn't understand why he was staying in a different brand's apartment rather than ours. So I think I started, you know, I realized what the shortcomings were within our sort of mini sector within business travel, and then I progressed from Bridge Street to a company called Citybase, who at the time were probably the most advanced company with regards to technology for booking service accommodation. Most of it was related to leisure. They found a niche where they sort of hit the leisure market before booking.com and Expedia and Airbnb even sort of, you know, was on people's lips. So they had this niche and they did very well out of it. But I saw the opportunity within the corporate market. And I think from my perspective, my thought process at that time was that surely it'd be better for a booker or a traveler to have rich information directly in front of them on a screen to make a qualified decision or quantified decision on where they want to stay. And you know, at that time, and I'm sure it still happens now, we used to send PDFs out of different properties, and here's three PDFs, take your pick. And from a traveler decision making, and particularly with regards to sort of things like, you know, traveler well-being, that's not a very good proposal to put, you know, a number of different options in front of them that doesn't really have a lot of information. So I left Citybase, and I think I just kind of absorbed so much that I wanted to change things. I wanted to make service accommodation simpler to book. I wanted to be able to introduce service accommodation to the corporate buyer in a direct way, like they do with hotels, where they can actually start to pre-qualify properties and whether they're a property that is acceptable onto a program. And I think what the problem has created previously, without having that a visibility through technology like they've had with hotels, through the, you know, the procurement process, it being on the GDS, the RFP process through Lanyon, most corporate buyers know exactly which hotel, what that hotel is that's on their program. They've got, they may not have, and I'll touch on this shortly, they may not have particularly a particular rich information on the safety and security elements of those hotels, but they do know the hotels, and there's an element of trust because they've been dealing with those hotels for many years. And if there is an issue within that hotel, they're probably most likely to hear it from their travelers anyway. But I think because service accommodation isn't available through those same channels, most buyers don't even know who the operators are. And as demand has increased from travelers, and we saw a real peak after COVID because of the natural ability to create space around you, it's brought to the forefront that travel buyers don't really know where their people are staying. And again, with that sort of visibility, they have to find a solution. And the only solution that's out there is to rely on other third parties to actually pick and choose where their travellers are going to stay. And that's that's a big hole in due diligence, and the sort of safety elements and security of their travellers. And also, I think from a traveller's perspective as well, it's a little bit of a stab in the dark sometimes as to where they're going to be staying, because we all know what to expect when we go and stay in a Marriott hotel or a Hilton or even a Travelodge or Premier Inn. We know our expectations are already managed, but when you're going to stay in a property in a location that is not familiar to you and you have no idea who's operating this particular property, that's a big concern for travelers and particularly on their well-being, that the mental health. So what our technology does is actually create that ability to introduce the operators to the travel buyers, and the travel buyers having now the enablement to procure directly and actually reduce cost, because obviously it's reducing, it's taking a third party element out of that process. They get a 360 degree overview of the property. We carry out a digital verification of each of those properties. The operators are taken through a roadmap of safety, security, guest welfare requirements and evidence collecting. And I think, I guess the other element we sort of fixed with it was the ability to integrate this content into other industry content, so that other people responsible, travel management companies, for example, responsible for that decision making where people stay, also have that sort of empowerment of property knowledge, and understand where people are going to be staying.
Thank you. There's a few things I want to just kind of go back and then go over, if that's okay. So first of all, I think the synergy between us is just always really interesting, because that HRS world for me was also one of the big catalysts for me understanding where I wanted to kind of sit in all of this as well. And quite timely that I then went to a TMC, because weirdly I didn't want to after selling against them for all those years, but it was a really good piece to do in this kind of extra viewpoint of everything that I now kind of have and understand. And I've talked about this in other podcasts. I remember when I was selling HRS, corporates and the EAs or the office managers, whoever it was that we were talking to, the travel managers, asking questions along the lines of, how are you vetting the hotels? And knowing deep down in the back of your mind that, yes, there was some sort of process going on because HRS did have hotel sales managers and la-da-da-da-da, but the volume of hotels versus the volume of hotel sales managers were not equating. And actually, we were living in a world then where it was all about content. It was all about numbers. There was a race for those hotel booking engines to get as much content on as they could. Yeah, yeah. HRS, yeah. Then booking.com. And then obviously we get into the private sector and Airbnb and all of these other kind of stuff that then kind of happened just sort of shortly afterwards. And then we ended up in a place where the content that was being provided by these huge big bed banks, for want of another word, was better than the content, potentially at least cheaper and more varied than the content being provided by the TMCs via the GDS, which allowed then corporates to go off program, which potentially they'd always been doing to a degree because of the issues around that. But then that whole conversation around price just got stronger, because obviously it was cheaper for people to book offline. And we just moved so far away from the safety, the checks, and the things that we used to do of hotel programs, say 20 or 30 years ago, when actually it was somebody's job to go and check the hotels and to go off with a checklist and do certain things. There was a verified hotel program. We sort of lost that, and actually lost the reasons why we had that, because it wasn't just about location and cost. And then kind of scattergun approached on based on price, which is where I think a lot of organizations still are today. Moving on to the apartment side, having been a TMC, both pre-Airbnb and all of that kind of thing, and post, apartments were just a nightmare for TMCs always. Like right at the beginning, It was a nightmare. As soon as someone said, if you got an apartment, you were like, oh. Because it wasn't on the GDS and it was difficult. You were coming out of the systems that you were working in. You didn't have any faith. You didn't have any understanding in what you were buying. A lot of the apartments companies started as no commission, which is an absolute no-go as far as TMCs are concerned. So you just had all this stuff that just didn't make it work. And it just wasn't easy. And the knock-on effect was that when people like Booking.com started working with apartments companies, that actually made it a lot easier for TMCs to book. But the issue was then, exactly as you pointed out, where is the endpoint? Who's running this? What is it? Is it one apartment in a block that's got nothing else to do with the apartments? There's so many questions that kind of, is there a 24-hour desk? Is it completely self-serve? What does that mean? Is there going to be, all of this? Where is it, I think, is the key as well, because obviously apartments are not in the same location as your kind of main hotels. And what does that look like? So lots of questions around it. And when we obviously started speaking again, the bit that I just jumped up and down on and got really, really excited about with you was this understanding that we've got to somehow use technology with all of its ability to speed things up and make processing easier and to actually keep track of things, to make those hotel programs or accommodation programs of yesteryear more accessible again. And we can do that by using technology to help us with that audit process. So we're not going to just go and choose an accommodation based on where they are. And by ticking a few things, we can actually ask the accommodation for proof. But you are the only company I've seen doing this.
Not sure where to start with implementing a standard such as ISO 31030? A gap analysis exercise from Ascent Risk Management is the best place to start. Our expert consultants will take you step by step through your chosen standard and highlight any weak areas. This can be conducted remotely, and the results of the gap analysis can form the plan for your targeted project. Contact Ascent today at www.ascent1, which is ASSENT1.com, and booking your gap analysis today.
So I really want to understand a bit more about your why into that. I can understand that you've seen a gap in the market. I get it from a business perspective, but this is quite different. You know, it is. It's not. It's certainly not how people who create bed banks think, because that's all about the commission and the sales. The RFP piece is another angle to it, which is just gorgeous, but I understand it because there's nothing out there for that. Where did this other bit come from as well?
I think if we go back 10 years ago, and probably before the explosion of alternative accommodations hotels, and somebody who might watch this or listen to this will sort of say, oh, no, there is no alternative. It's just accommodation. It's just accommodation. We talk about accommodation, not alternative hotels. We saw that explosion over the last 10, 12 years and the introduction of Airbnb, and I think Booking.com expanding their wings and bringing in all sorts of different types of accommodation from somebody's bedroom right through to, you know, a single apartment, et cetera, et cetera. And I guess it's had a positive effect on the professional operators of service accommodation, because it's brought to the forefront that there is alternative ways of traveling and staying in different buildings. So from that was a positive element of it. The negative part of it was the lack of due diligence amongst the different OTAs, even the different specialist agents. You're right. It was very similar to the days of HRS. It was about numbers, you know, and I'm forever seeing promotions of, you know, we've got 1.2 million apartments in, you know, 15,000 buildings in 1,700 locations. So what? You know, the important thing from a travel buyer is, what have you got in the locations that are really important to me, and what are you know, what's the quality, what's the standard of those departments, you know? So I think we sort of let ourselves push sort of this type of accommodation as the solution to not staying in a hotel, but we haven't done enough to ensure that the safety and security of these properties are at a standard that is acceptable, not just from a business traveler perspective, but anybody who's going onto a website or picking the phone up to somebody or sending an email and being offered, you know, this accommodation, it has to be a safe and secure and legal property. And I was seeing this influx of properties that weren't hotels that, again, as I say, they were very much driven by the ability to gain bookings through the likes of Airbnb and Booking.com. It's dead easy. You know, I can go into a building tomorrow, get two apartments, and the next day they're on Airbnb or they're on Booking.com with very little due diligence. So it means that anybody is capable of doing that. And it also shows, I've just written a piece for Business Travel News that was very much focusing on the difference between the airline industry and the accommodation industry with regards to regulation. And we don't have any regulation in accommodation, but the risk to people staying in a property is just as high as getting on an aeroplane, if not greater, because we've seen a number of different on-ground events that have affected buildings that people are staying in, whether it's conflict, fire, buildings falling down, flooding, tsunamis, whatever it might be, there's a risk there. And you can only mitigate so much of that risk, but there are elements of that building and an individual stay there that can actually be managed. And I think what I started to see was that we were just seeing any types of accommodation coming into the market, and people really not having an idea of, you know, whether that property was being operated legally. If I take, for example, a fire risk assessment in any building offering commercial accommodation, that has to be done every 12 months. It is a legal requirement in the UK. I'm in a position where I'm educating operators now that there are levels of safety and security that need to be increased, need to up the game a little bit. And that's not, I'm not saying any of this is intentional from a lot of operators. You know, it's education in a lot of cases. So the focus on our technology to verify properties was to take the property owners through a process that would help them identify areas that they may not have considered whilst they've been operating, you know, areas of safety, diligence and security, guest welfare. You know, obviously guest welfare had a considerable spotlight put on it during COVID. And to be honest, you know, most of the operators of service accommodation were really quick to put in place procedures to ensure that they were looking after their people to the highest level, you know, keeping them safe. And obviously it was the one area that maintained or continued to operate, because it was an opportunity for people who were essential workers during COVID, who couldn't travel because the trains were operating, etc., could actually stay in an apartment close to where they needed to be, particularly NHS staff and other key workers. So I think that sort of brought our industry to an age where we were recognised as being considerate. However, there are still shortcomings, I think, in who is able to operate, where people are allowed to operate, the transparency part of it. So, like you touched on, you know, there are operators out there who take a whole building and therefore are responsible for the whole building. And the risk element to a travel there is obviously considerably less than in a building where an operator has four or five apartments in a building of 100 apartments, and you have no idea who else is there. You the responsibility of the maintenance of the building, the safety, the security, the sort of fire extinguishers, the exits, the lift maintenance, you know, all these types of things, that's a responsibility of somebody else, not the person you're staying with. So we're just trying to, you know, as well as the RFP process that we introduce to allow corporate buyers to have greater transparency of what's out there and who the operators are and what they operate. This was to create transparency on the levels of safety and security contingency plans that these operators have in place, both pre, day by day processes and procedures, but also what they have in place with regard to you know, a particular situation, you know, and whether that's an evacuation of the building, et cetera, et cetera. And I think we've made it, you know, I think we sort of move that forward and touch on hotels. We've made it, we've made accommodation, I think, not as reputable from a safety and security perspective as we could do, you know. And when we go back to sort of what the airlines have to prove in their process in order to operate, I think we have to do something similar. Not, you know, obviously the very different guidelines, very different specifications, etc. But as I mentioned in the piece I've just written, properties don't move. Yeah, they're fixed, unless you happen to be on a boat, you know, on a cruise line or something like that. Your accommodation is fixed; it sticks in the ground. So, surely it's one of the easier elements of any travel program to mitigate risk. And I'm not saying that we should be sending out, you know, inspectors to every property globally, every hotel, every service accommodation building, because that goes against our other focus, you know, as an industry, which is sustainability. So we need to be reducing travel, not increasing travel. So that's where technology comes in. And technology is very clever these days. We've seen, you know, probably in the last 25 years, we've seen an explosion of technology capability. We've seen AI come into the picture, and talking about AI removing, you know, the majority of travel jobs. But we still can't use technology to simplify a process of ensuring that where I'm going to sleep is safe and secure and legal. So that is what
we can use technology like that, and that's exactly what, you know, you guys are doing. It's just we haven't made that the priority up until now. We've made the priority about volume and spend and price and all this other stuff. The technology is 100% there, and this is exactly why I want to showcase, you know, you and other people that we've had on this, because it's there now to make this better, that we can work on this together. And ultimately, whether that be a personal incident for that person or being involved in something much bigger, when questions are asked, they're going to want to know that that accommodation was vetted in some way, not that you decided that you went with them because they were close-ish to where you needed to be and they were within this ridiculously low price range that you need. That's not going to stand up to that person. It's certainly not going to stand up in court, and it's not going to stand up to the family of that person either. And that's the truth of it, right? That's where we need to get to. And that's why I so admire what you've done and where you're going with this. And the fact that you have the foresight to open this up to all accommodation, because there's a lot of assumption made. There's a lot of assumption made by travellers and bookers that if they're booking with booking.com or Airbnb, because they know that name, that therefore something's been done in the background. Done on what? You know, what are you asking them for? There is, as you rightly said, no standard in this space. And I think that's what I really want to, and believe it or not, we've already got to half an hour, so it's gone really quickly. And I want to get to your final tips, but I think that's where we, you know, certainly a conversation you and I continue to have. It's certainly something that we're talking about in the standards world. It's why 31030 exists, so that we can create a standard with across well-being or safety or sustainability, whichever area we're looking at, that the world globally agrees on, as opposed to us all doing this separately. Because doing this separately is pointless. It's a waste of money. It's a waste of resources. But actually, every company needs to know the same thing, and every apartment or accommodation hotel should be saying the same thing. Every vendor, because this goes across all vendors. Okay, Gary, look, thank you for speaking so candidly and openly about what you're doing. I am conscious of time, and it does disappear really quickly, so I just want to make sure that you've got chance to give your golden nuggets or your tips to anybody in this space who's sort of wanting to think about this now, and you've raised a few questions for them?
I guess it's the awareness that the technology does exist out there, and I think from my perspective, this technology can now be used by the industry, the corporate buyers, and we talk about creating something globally, something that can be the same standard throughout every region across the globe. And I think this is the opportunity to do that. And I think, from my perspective, I've got some very clever developers, and we've put this on the table now to sort of talk to, to put it out to the industry to sort of say, this is here. You take it, you run with it, you set it up how you foresee the due diligence that you require, the standard that you expect of every property globally, and we set it. The technology just needs to set that. And I think if every hotel and every accommodation operator knows what that standard is, then they have something to work with. And at the moment, they don't have anything to work with. And that's what we're finding at the moment, is nobody has created a level playing field across accommodation before. And nobody's created the guidelines for those different operators. Yes, we know that the big chains have people in place to ensure that their own properties meet certain standards. And I know from people I know in the industry, they hate it when the people come in and check that they've got this done and they've done that. And so there is quite vigorous testing, but it's all internal testing, and it's all internal guidelines and standards rather than it be a standard across the globe. But what is probably more concerning is all the individual independent properties out there. There's no guidelines for them. They don't have a team that can support them in ensuring that they're maintaining certain levels of standards. So it's really for me to put that out to the industry to sort of say, here it is, it exists, it's on the table. There is no set standard with the technology. It's there to be created by those that need to drive this forward for the benefit of all their travelers, basically.
Thank you. And needless to say, we're going to be jumping all over this piece of technology in everything that we talk about with TravelWist, because it's about setting the bar, but it's also giving a platform for people to go on this journey. We know the reason that we do this is that the travel service providers have got a bit to get to get to the levels that perhaps we're expecting them to. And we can do that. We can actually meet people where they are and then take them to the next stage across all of these things. And not just the stuff you have to do legally from a requirements perspective, but what actually you should be doing morally, but also what will also win you more business, because those huge suppliers that you want to work with are now asking questions around this of their vendors. And how do you do that easily? Gary, thank you so much. It literally whizzes by. I was really looking forward to today, and you certainly haven't disappointed. I think you've shone a light on a whole area, or something that I think people know about, but they just don't know how to deal with it. So they're just kind of putting it to the back of their mind, along with ground transport and a few other things that we don't really know how to deal with from a safety perspective. So thank you so much. But I think more importantly, thank you for having the foresight to go out there and build it. You heard it here, guys. The technology is there. We just need to bring that into our programs and start standing up for what our standards are and what our expectations are. We can do that. We don't need to rely on other people to do that. Every organization can do that. Gary, thank you so much. You have been listening to Talking TRM, the podcast dedicated to travel risk management. My name is Bex Dedman, also known as Travel Risk Bex, and we have been joined today by Gary Hurst, CEO of Miser. Thank you so much, Gary.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Talking TRM is in association with Ascent Risk Management. If you enjoyed listening to today's podcast, please subscribe and make sure to leave a review. If you need any help with implementing an ISO standard, such as ISO 31030, or if you have any questions regarding ISO, please reach out to Ascent Risk Management to talk to our expert consultants today. We can be found at www.ascent1.com. We're also on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram, and links can be found in the show description. This podcast is a Clemark Studio production and was produced by Jessica Ingalls.